Now I'll bring you to our next next interview for the program, and we are joined today by Mark Del Rosero, who is an organiser for the Socialist Alliance Gadigal/Sydney branch and originally from the Philippines. He was an overseas migrant worker for several years before migrating to Australia in 2016, and he's currently serving as a councillor in the Central Council of Public Service Association New South Wales Trade Union, and he's also a member of the Australian-Cuba Friendship Society Sydney branch. And Mark's just recently came back from a trip to Cuba as part of the Southern Cross Brigade last December. Good morning, Mark's.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah. So to kind of start off, you travelled to Cuba with the 31st Southern Cross Brigade last December to January 2026. Can you tell us about what you saw on the ground there, and what was sort of your observations about the impacts of the blockade?
Yeah. So when we arrived there, I arrived December 19th. So the situation on the ground there is already dire. Just speaking for myself, I saw like three immediate problems on the streets. First, when I landed there, there's a power blackout. When you get out of the airport, there's almost no electricity except for some street lights and, you know, traffic signs, traffic lights. So the power outages, the power blackouts can last from a few hours to half a day. And that's the first problem. The second one is the situation with the rubbish collection. So I think with the lack of fuel and when the U.S. started blocking or positioning their warships around Venezuela, I think this was in August last year, there was pressure to limit the oil supply, because Venezuela is the main oil supplier of Cuba at the time. So what the Cuban government was doing is they were consciously rationing or trying to, you know, limit the use through like scheduled blackouts. And so that's part of it. And because of those, you know, scheduled power interruptions, there weren't enough trucks, fuel for the trucks that do regular rubbish collections on the street, so they were just piling up on the street. When I was in my taxi going to the dorm that I rented before going to the main camp where all the international brigades stayed for weeks, you can see the car maneuvering around the piles of rubbish. And the third immediate problem I saw, this was even before we landed there, is the presence of mosquito-borne diseases, particularly chikungunya. It's spread by mosquitoes, also dengue fever. So we were advised to always have mosquito repellents with us. So, and there was also one international brigadista from Venezuela who was sent home because they exhibited symptoms of chikungunya. So, yeah. But the effects after that, I noticed like three distinct periods. So before we arrived, the situation was already like that. There's already the problem of rationing fuel, scheduled blackouts, problems with rubbish collection. And then because of also that, there's almost no public transportation available. So you regularly see Cubans along roads and highways, trying to get a ride from private cars, private buses, private vehicles. Some of them are even offering to pay in cash. But yeah, because there's almost no public transport, you can't get to where they are. And the second phase, it intensified after the bombing of Venezuela and the abduction of the president and the president's wife. So that really, you know, The people I spoke with, there's fear, anger, uncertainty hovering around that. And then there are also 32 Cubans who were killed in that invasion by the U.S. So, yeah. that escalated the situation even further. But before that, I left the island on January 9th, so the immediate effects of that I didn't get to experience as much, because after the events of the bombing and abduction, I left after a week then. But through the news, I can sort of get a feel in asking the people I met there how the situation keeps getting worse. And it's reaching, you know, really critical stages now after February, when there's no fuel, no oil to power transportation, because every industry, not just Cuba, relies on, you know, some sort of fuel to power your factories, your hospitals, your schools. So a lot of government services are almost, you know, crippled or not running at all in Cuba right now.
Good morning, Marx. It's Mary here. How are you?
I'm good, Mary.
A lot of the Western media is focusing on supposed attacks on the Communist Party of Cuba by ordinary Cubans. But what did you experience? How have the Cuban people responded? Is there resistance to the U.S. and a defense of their revolution?
So around the time of the events in Venezuela on January 3, it was known the next day that the 32 Cubans were killed there. So January 5 and 6 were declared national days of mourning. I was with the Southern Cross Brigade, and we were touring the Matanzas province. That's near where the Bay of Pigs invasion happened. That's where we were, and all of the hospitals and the schools we passed by, the flags are in half mast. And we heard reports, it was also reported in international media that hundreds of thousands of Cubans showed up, you know, to, like, in solidarity rallies in Havana. And imagine that there's no public transportation. People just showed up on the street. So there's still this massive support. And even if people complain about the response of the government or lack of response or delay in delivering the services, they know who the real enemy is. They know all of the hardships are caused by the illegal U.S. blockade. And so the people continue to resist, not just in the form of, you know, not focusing on overthrowing the government. There are indeed some elements of that, but there are few and far between. The people, on the whole, majority of them, even if they have criticisms, and you're free to express your criticism in Cuba, unless you're, you know, openly expressing sedition.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, the people there won't support a U.S.-backed coup d'etat at all. So, yes, they have complaints, but the revolution, this is maybe just my personal bias, but it's different there when people, you know, there are still people alive in Cuba that know the life before the revolution and what came after. And Cuba's, I think, among the Caribbean, has the oldest population because of their excellent healthcare and services. So that knowledge is still imparted. If people go to university, there's a mandatory Marxism course they have to take. People are, you know, almost everyone's literate. They know how to read and write. So there's mandatory education until year 9. So, yeah, people are politically attuned. They still know what's happening. Although, yes, some may, you know, have left the island to seek better opportunities. But, yeah, I still can see that the revolution's still alive. Although the people are reeling, but they have the experience of what happened in 1991 after collapse of the Soviet Union. So, yeah, we hope that those lessons that people have learned to live through they get something from that and apply it again to this, the new generation's challenge. It was called the special period back then. So this generation has this special period to contend with. And but it shouldn't be up to Cuba, you know. It's like, yes, because the Cubans are resilient. They've been fighting for decades. They've been overcoming, punching above their weight despite the crippling sanctions and blockade that they have to go through. They shouldn't have to endure this. You know, the rest of the world needs to step up. They always vote in the UN, you know, to abolish the U.S. illegal blockade, but it's just a symbolic vote. Now's the time for action.
Yeah, so thanks for that, Marx. And I guess I want to kind of hear from... I might skip over this third question. I might go straight to the fourth question, which is, what can you tell us about the Southern Cross Brigade and how others can get involved? Do they regularly do yearly trips to Cuba?
Yes. So typically the Southern Cross Brigade organizes trips around December, January. But there are also some brigade missions like the May Day Brigade. I know there's one comrade from Gago, Sydney, who will be joining the brigade mission because it's just so difficult to book a flight because of the fuel situation. But yeah, there's that. But the marquee event is always like December, January. So if people want to get involved, get in touch with the local Australia-Cuba Friendship Society branch where you are. There's one present in most major cities in Australia. So, yeah, that's how you can get involved there.
So many of us know what Cuba has done to support national liberation movements around the world, sending doctors, nurses, all sorts of people to provide humanitarian aid around the world. Why do you think it is important now to show solidarity with Cuba and the Cuban people?
Yeah, because Cuba, throughout its history, especially after they had their revolution, they never wavered in their internationalism. There's always that solidarity, that willingness to help, even for little or no gain. So we know that the Cubans, when Fidel and Che were still alive, they sent, you know, support for Angola, the ANC in South Africa, Algeria, Mozambique, even Ethiopia. So they know the power of, you know, national liberation movements and trying to push that socialist internationalism. But even then, that's only, you know, trumped by their humanitarian aid around the world. So the most recent one during the COVID, it's really dangerous to send people without a vaccine, but the Cuban doctors, the Henry Brigade went to Italy and other countries in Europe who will accept them. And then when they left, the people were so grateful for providing that level of health care when they were being ravaged by the pandemic and thousands are dying. There's also literacy programs. Cuba's literacy program is, you wouldn't believe that they did it in 9 months. They achieved like over 90% literacy in less than 9 months. And so they sort of help others with their literacy programs as well. So they did this with Venezuela, partnership with Venezuela, and it resulted in the Yo Si Puedo or Yes I Can program, which also spread even to Australia and Aotearoa, New Zealand. So Aboriginal and Maori communities benefited from that program of literacy pioneered in Cuba. And that literacy program as well, the partnership between Cuba and Venezuela, because when they were teaching the people how to read, they found out that some people are having difficulties learning because of their eyesight problems. And so they started this program called Operación Milagro or Operation Miracle, Well, it was so successful. It's a program, healthcare program, to treat blindness and vision impairment issues in among the population of Venezuela. It was so successful that it was, you know, imported throughout the region, Latin America, the Caribbean, even some countries in Africa. It was so successful that the Bolivian soldier who executed Che Guevara, Mario Terán, under a false identity, he applied to get cataract surgery. And so imagine that, you know, that's a victory of socialism, that the person who, you know, a brutal example of executing one of the heroes of the revolution, they repay that with kindness and, you know, humanitarian aid. So Cuba, to its credit, it doesn't, you know, it always tries to foster international relations, friendly relations. And the reason we went there, 41st Southern Cross Brigade, that was the 65th anniversary of the institution called Cuban Institution for Friendship with the Peoples. So that's like an international movement started during the time of Fidel Castro to build partnerships and relationships with countries around the world who are willing to, you know, have that friendly relations with Cuba, not just trade. It could be cultural, educational, scientific. Yeah. So that's all, you know, just some of the few things that Cuba has done for the world. And the world shouldn't forget that. They keep voting in the UN. So it's time to pressure your governments diplomatically, economically, to do something to pressure the U.S., to break away from this U.S. system. You need to pressure your governments. You need to protest. You need to spread the word that Cuba is suffering and we must not let this continue.